For this discussion, I will focus on photographs that were created for late 19th century medical text written by Dr. Adnell Hewson of the Pennsylvania Hospital here in Philadelphia. Dr. Hewson's book, of which this is the cover page, is entitled Earth as Topical Application in Surgery, and it outlines 93 case studies in which he used earth to seemingly heal post-operative wounds. And he included photographs of four of these case studies. As these images are of patients who underwent surgeries, they may be difficult for the contemporary viewer. These are the four photographs in Dr. Hewson's text. For this particular talk, I will focus on the first three of these four images, and I've added the names of the patients in brackets on the screen. Typical of many late 19th century studio portraits, Matthew Brady's Clara Barton employs photographic conventions that communicate Barton's refinement and status in society. Forming a traditional triangular composition, Barton's figure denotes a strong, stable individual, while the lace, smooth texture of her dress, shiny buttons, and white gloves held delicately in her left hand communicate her status as a respectable, middle-class white woman. Guided by the upward, diagonal slopes of her full dress, the viewer's eye rests on Barton's face, which resides in the middle top third of the composition, set off by her black hair and dress, as well as the darker areas of the backdrop around her. Serenely smiling, gazing directly at the viewer, Barton's facial expression and posture make the viewer feel at ease with her presence. If one compares Brady's photograph of Clara Barton to a clinical photograph created for Dr. Hewson's medical text, one sees many striking similarities. In the clinical text on our right, the fullness of the patient's striped skirt works to fill the base of the triangular composition, while her arms, bent awkwardly at the elbow, and the cloth draped over her shoulders guide the viewer's eye upward. Like Clara Barton, this sitter's body dominates the frame as she faces the viewer, and her head occupies the center of the top third of the photograph while she gazes directly in front of her. Although the staging and posing of the sitter in this clinical photograph is in keeping with a series of accepted stylistic modes common in late 19th century studio portraiture, many jarring differences exist between Brady's portrait and the clinical photograph on the right. Even though the triangular composition of the medical photograph echoes that of Brady's, the body of the woman in the clinical photograph lacks the lavish dress, lace, and buttons that relay Barton's respectable stature and feminine nature. Used to illuminate the sitter's face in Brady's portrait, the light in the clinical photograph highlights the sitter's torso, where the viewer is confronted with a scar, and further attention is called to her chest by the white shirt that has been partially taken off. Lacking Barton's smile, the sitter on the right stares blankly, alive but not lifelike, and her body has been placed on display for the viewer. Whereas the portrait of Clara Barton has been constructed to assert her inner character by making her the center of aesthetic attention, the clinical photograph employs the same conventions to make the scar and what it simultaneously reveals and also conceals the subject of the photograph rather than the patient. Why was photography employed to create such a drastic objectification of the sitter in the clinical photograph on the right? How and why did this clinical photograph, as with so many others produced in postbellum Philadelphia, operate for their viewers in the medical community? Moreover, what is the relationship between this clinical photograph and postbellum Philadelphia culture? In this paper, I will investigate these questions by examining Dr. Hewson's photographs within their sociocultural context, which I hope will suggest answers to these critical questions as well as provoke new inquiries. In late 19th century Philadelphia, the discourse of progress, so crucial to dominant ideologies, was undermined by the discourse of crisis, invoked by the many shifts occurring in society, such as the increasing modernization of cities, class mobility, the freedom of African Americans, and the question of women's suffrage and citizenship. These issues threatened the dominance of the white upper-class male, who depended upon the discourse of progress to maintain his place at the top of the social hierarchy, and the medical community was part of this upper class. Philadelphia's vital role in the Civil War meant that its citizens were exposed to and directly affected by the war and its aftermath. Entrenched in the war effort, the medical community was exposed to new and increasingly difficult cases. Their knowledge, skills, and technological abilities of surgeons in particular were challenged as they were faced with many countless amputations and new types of injuries from modern warfare. As a result, many surgical and technological advancements were made, and the medical profession as a whole grew to be better respected in society. This carnage, however, echoed through the social body and had a lasting impact. Surgeons, in an effort to alleviate the widespread devastation of the Civil War, employed various strategies of coping with this trauma. One such strategy involved narrating and thereby organizing bodily experiences in medical texts such as Dr. Houston's book. Infection, especially post-operative, such as the one suffered by the soldier seen here on the screen after a thumb amputation, was a major cause of complications and death after surgical procedures. The Philadelphia Hospital was an important site of medical innovations after the war, and many doctors there, including Dr. Houston, experimented with ways to treat post-operative wounds, thereby ensuring the success, legitimacy, and dominance of the medical field and the class to which the doctors were a part. Founded in 1751 by Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Bond here in Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania Hospital is the oldest and one of the most prestigious hospitals in America. As the first hospital in the country, they accepted cases from all over the nation by those who could not find or afford care in their hometowns. Alongside these improvements that were being made in and the growing respect towards the medical field, photography also experienced many technological advancements and was in demand by the medical community, who valued its presumed ability to document and record the physical world. As a cradle for innovations in both of these disciplines, Philadelphia was the site of many periodicals on photography, including the Philadelphia Photographer, as well as medical periodicals that included photographs, such as the Photographic Review of Medicine and Surgery. Seeking to absorb the sickening and dangerous stench that emanated from the wound of one of his patients, Hannah C., who underwent a mastectomy for breast cancer, Dr. Houston applied earth to her wound, which he had read could absorb the odor from human waste. According to a contemporary New York Post article, the results of his experiment were, quote, magical. Made for inclusion in Dr. Houston's text, this clinical photograph, along with the three others that accompany it, work to, as Dr. Houston states in the introduction of his book, quote, most perfectly capture this medical advancement, end quote. With its presumed self-evident nature, photography was seen as having the ability to faithfully document the physical world, which was appealing to the medical community and many individuals in American society. This clinical photograph of Hannah C. works to collect presumed data of her earth cure, evidenced by the long, clean scar that lacks the odor and inflammation associated with post-operative infection, and it also reveals much about the culture in which it was created. Denying the feminine nature of the patient whose removed right breast has been replaced by a lengthy scar and whose left seemingly healthy breast exists only as a stark contrast to this absence, the photographic process has rendered her body sexless, odorless, and free of disease, thereby acceptable for the viewer. Contingent on stable, rehabilitated bodies, Dr. Houston takes his narrative of progress further in the clinical photograph of J.F. Sustained from an accident on the Ohio Railroad, JF's injury participates in the anxiety over expanding industrial developments that were altering the fabric of postbellum Philadelphia as well as the United States as a whole. Denied a body or face, the stump of JF stands upright on a table, not unlike the table in Brady's Clara Barton. Instead of aiding the completion of the triangle formed by Barton's body, however, the table in this clinical photograph, centered and neatly covered with a cloth, allows for the display of JF's stump. The viewer's eye is led across and up the photographic surface by the whiteness of JF's arm, seen in contrast to the darkness of his clothing, the tablecloth, and the background. Situated slightly above JF, the viewer can partially see the surface of his amputated stump, clean and free of infection. In effect, JF's personhood has been erased, reduced to a limb, which resembles a pipe or other industrial equipment more than a human arm, as his face and body have been deemed unnecessary for the photograph to communicate Dr. Houston's success. Although the photographic moment was understood as evidence of Dr. Houston's cure, it acts, as Aaron O'Connor notes of clinical photography, to, quote, drastically limit the terms upon which his cures can be known, end quote. Moreover, this clinical photograph points to the larger cultural desire to restructure reality and promote an idea of a unified nation through narratives of social and economic rehabilitation. Further denying the body of its individuality and restricting the manner in which Dr. Houston's cures were relayed to his viewers, this clinical photograph of the cast of Abigail B. Stump reveals a severe instance of the social anxiety that permeated the fabric of postbellum Philadelphia and the nation. In his text, Dr. Houston gives an account of Abigail B., a, quote, colored woman who suffered from a tumor for over 13 years. End quote. She was admitted to the hospital in order to have her leg amputated to relieve her of the pain caused by this growth. After the amputation, Abigail B. suffered from symptoms of shock and depression, as well as nausea and vomiting. But treatment for these symptoms were not addressed in Dr. Houston's text. Rather, he details at length information regarding the earth treatment for her postoperative wound, specifically the box made of binder's boards, in which a bed of dry earth containing dressing made with the, quote, greatest care and gentleness, end quote, for Abigail B.'s amputated leg. The morning after Abigail B.'s surgery, her pulse and temperature were high, but Dr. Houston's text only focuses on her stump, reporting that it was, quote, not disturbed, end quote. Although Abigail B.'s emotional and gastrointestinal symptoms continued to worsen, Dr. Houston's case study focuses only on his care for her stump. Describing in detail the process by which he removed the stitches, giving their angle and length, as well as the amount of discharge from the wound. By the eighth day after the operation, Dr. Houston reports that there was, quote, no odor from the wound and no pain since the operation, end quote. Although Abigail B.'s stump was healing in accordance with Dr. Houston's expectations, she passed away later that day from what an autopsy declared to be a blood clot in her heart. Following her death, Dr. Houston had a cast made of her stump. From the cast, he had two photographs made with two different views, which, as Dr. Houston states, quote, show as well as possible the extent of the union, end quote. In his book, Dr. Houston encourages the reader to look at the photographs as a, quote, careful examination of these pictures will show that there was never any loss of substance and that union had taken place, end quote. Furthermore, Dr. Houston states that Abigail B.'s, quote, unfortunate termination gave the opportunity of completing the record in such a way as to render it one of the most instructive cases possible, end quote. Taken as the most precise and accurate form of evidence of his success, the clinical photograph of Abigail B.'s stump effaces the circumstances of her death, disease, and the blackness of her body. Replaced by the whiteness of the plaster cast, Abigail B.'s body, no longer required for demonstrating Dr. Houston's cure, has been negated. The blackness of Abigail B.'s body was one that troubled postbellum white upper-class society, and the new freedom of the black body was part of the discourse of crisis that they sought to suppress. Another example of subduing the black body exists in this clinical photograph from the Photographic Review of Medicine and Surgery, in which the viewer sees a young African-American male uncomfortably seated in a barren environment. Turned toward the viewer, Daniel McDowell, an inmate in a Kentucky prison, gazes downward as his tense body is held in place by an instrument that forces his left, diseased arm, and by extension, his diseased body, to stay within the frame of the photograph. His right, seemingly healthy arm clutches onto the seat of the chair in which his body is forced to sit. McDowell's tense, agitated body attempts to resist its subjugation, but he isn't able to free himself of the restrictions placed upon him by the photographic frame, and by extension, the culture that created the circumstances of this clinical photograph. Rather than a body that confers personal achievement and economic success, the viewer is given an image of a body that reaffirms his notions of the black, criminal, diseased body that needs to be controlled and disciplined. In analyzing these clinical photographs, it is crucial to ask, why choose, why photograph this subject, this moment, rather than some other? The assumed self-evident nature of the photograph allowed viewers of Dr. Houston's book and other clinical photographs to assume that what was contained within the photographic frame was a truthful reflection of the world around them. As such, these clinical photographs reveal the attempt to force all bodies into the worldview of their intended audience. Unacceptable and threatening, the female, diseased, lower class, and black bodies of the subjects for these clinical photographs are transformed into objects similar to those in contemporary historical museums to be possessed, scrutinized, and analyzed. Moreover, these clinical photographs attempt to shut out the odor, disease, uncertainty, blackness, poverty, and femininity of the body and replace it with the clean, safe, stable, and healthy body that participates in what the camera and its users have chosen to expose. In their ability to make blackness white, disease cured, deviant controlled, and fragment unified, these clinical photographs enacted a much-needed restructuring of reality that worked to reaffirm period notions of gender, class, nation, and race. Moreover, these clinical photographs provoke more critical questions regarding the multifaceted intersections of text and image, photography and time, and further consideration should be given to whether or not this reaffirmation of period notions was undermined within the photographs themselves or by other sources. Although many of these clinical photographs remain, as O'Connor states, quote, unknown, unseen, and ignored in the histories of American photography, end quote, they play a significant role in many areas of study, as does clinical photography of our own time, and it is my hope that further critical attention be devoted to these works. Thank you.